My father stood in the center aisle of the Lady Chapel, that hunched, hexed little building he hated as a father and as a firefighter, under the lowering band of sooty, mean-colored smoke, and he looked right at me. He understood what had happened to me, and although he couldn't tell me then, he was still happy. He thought I was one of the lucky ones. I was. This is what I remember. There were 50 of us in the Lady Chapel that late afternoon, December 20th, the shortest day of the year. Inside, in winter, it was always about as warm and bright as an igloo. Wearing our coats and mittens as we sang, O Come, Emmanuel, we could see our breath. As a place of worship and a historic structure, the Lady Chapel was exempt from all the building codes and conformed to none of them, which was why Dad despised the very sight of it. The mahogany pews, each with a different intricate carving, massaged for 70 years with layers of flammable polish, were nothing but tinder to him. Raw and reckless new structures, when they burned, were flimsy as tents. But the old chapel had stone walls a foot thick and had been re-roofed so many times that Dad said it could have withstood a phosphorus bomb. It didn't take anything as potent as a bomb. Only a small candle in a small draft. That day, just as the choir master, Mr. Treadwell, brought together his fingertips and held them up to his delicate cheekbones, twinkly as a ballerina. Looking back, I think Mr. Treadwell was twinkly all the time, what my mother called a confirmed bachelor. First one, and then the other Christmas tree on either side of the altar went up like 10-foot sparklers. A few kids simply stood, flat-footed and amazed, as though the pyrotechnics were some sort of holiday surprise. I knew better than to think that, even for a second. It was only luck that I was in the last row of the choir's three-tiered semicircle, because I was taller and older, in eighth grade. I turned to run straight back, but the fire was more agile, leaping voraciously ahead of me along the strip of gold carpet between the seats. The Advent banners dodged and gyrated above my head like burning bats. I held my new purse, a birthday present from my grandmother Caruso, up to my face, instinctively protecting my lungs. Then I turned around to face the fire on the altar, which went against all instincts, except for someone raised in my father's catechism, keep cool, keep making choices. These rules were not second nature to me by then. They were first nature. I felt my way along the communion rail and then turned left at the wall, feeling my way along under the windows until I saw what I knew must be the door, a ghostly flapping of white light that looked like a giant moth. This, I knew, must be the door opening and closing. When I got there, I reached for the big bronze curve of the door handle. I knew it must be there. But my fingers were clumsy in my leather mitten, and when I stopped to pull it off, other kids rear-ended me, knocking me sideways. I jumped up and grabbed for the door handle again, trying to ignore the escalating chorus of high-pitched screaming. Was there a moment of stupor? It could only have been a moment. The next thing I recall clearly was standing up, looking over my shoulder at the oxygen mask on the face of my father's rookie, Renee Mayerling, a grown woman who was not as tall as I was already at 13. She shoved me along with the exigent roughness of a rescuer, with the other hand dragging Libby Vandewater. Suddenly, I was out, tripping and falling on my face in a foot of fresh, burning cold snow, which probably saved my eyes. As soon as I could, I lifted my head to look around me. There was my friend Joey Lavoie and his brother Polly, who were not in the choir but had come running over from the school yelling, "Help them! Help them!" That's when I really saw the other kids from the choir everywhere around me, some lying still as sleeping bags, closed and pale, others crawling half-naked because their clothes had caught fire. There were a few I didn't even recognize, because somehow their arms and faces were swollen as brown as the surface of caramel apples.